Word of mouth.
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 Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When you think about prison work programs, you think license plates and chain gangs, or that scene from Shawshank Redemption when the prisoners retar a roof. But today's convicts aren't just stamping out vanity plates or breaking up rocks by the side of the highway. They're making stuffed animals, breaking wild stallions, and growing artisanal food products. Graham Wood is books editor at Pacific Standard, where we found his article, From Our Prison to Your Table. Graham Wood, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Good to be here.
Well, Graham, I have to quote a line from your article that I just couldn't get over. You say, if you had eaten buffalo mozzarella in this country, there's a very good chance you've eaten the product of inmate labor. Really?
Yes. So the largest buffalo mozzarella or buffalo milk dairy in the country is in Canyon City, Colorado, and it's run pretty much entirely by inmates. It's artisanal. There's not that many buffalo milk producers in the country, but this is the biggest one. So if you've eaten buffalo milk mozzarella, if you eat it regularly, then almost certainly you've had their product.
And that is the site of Colorado Correctional Industries, which you toured. Tell us a little bit about your visit.
It's an enormous campus in a really beautiful setting in the Colorado mountains. If you saw it from the road, you might not think it's a prison. It doesn't really look like one. It's just a big open space. But it's got 4,000 inmates who are there, and most of them are working in these industries. And many of them are outdoor agricultural industries, like raising buffaloes. But there are some who have other agricultural things, like making wine grapes, breaking stallions, as you say, and others who work on stitching stuffed animals and other things. So it's a great big multi-dimensional prison work colony.
It's unbelievable, some of the products. They raise Hungarian partridges. They raise red-clawed Australian lobsters, tilapia, blackberries. Why these niche products?
First of all, you're making me hungry just remembering these things. You know, the reason they choose these niche products, I think, is because they could raise more conventional items. And, you know, they do have cows and some other things. If they have niche products, though, then they're less likely to be stepping on the feet of private industry. You know, there aren't very many entities in the United States that are raising Hungarian partridges, but there's a demand for Hungarian partridges. It's small. Hunting clubs want them so they can be released and then shot. But, you know, if prisoners are doing it, they're unlikely to be destroying other industries elsewhere, and there's also less likelihood that those industries will lead a push for more scrutiny of the practices of the prison labor.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of fly under the radar this way by having niche industries instead of mainstream ones.
How much are CCI inmates paid, and how might that compare with other prison workers in other prisons?
They're paid reasonably well by prison worker standards. After all, there are some state systems where prisoners don't get paid anything. CCI inmates, though, we're talking about $1.50 an hour,
mm-hmm.
So well below federal minimum wage. Again, first of all, they're prisoners, so they don't have much choice. And second of all, a lot of their money is taken away. Even if they were paid more, most of it would be taken away for things like restitution and other kinds of fees that inmates are subject to, but the free people are not.
They will break a stallion for you at CCI for $900. So the prisoners don't make money based on tasks, do they?
No, they don't. They are paid by the hour they work. There's also the disincentives that are offered to them. If they don't do a good job or if they're not diligent in their labor, then they can be sent right back into the general population.
Mm-hmm. So this is a plum job. They want to be out of the general population.
Yes. The prisoners who I saw were people who had really earned their way into the CCI labor system. If you screw up in a regular job, you might get fired, you might get disciplined. If you screw up in these jobs, you get sent back into what, you know, like most prison systems in the United States, a very unpleasant place. But instead, they're out there in the open air. They have something to do with their time. And I think it's really psychologically good for them to be out there, even if we have questions about whether the labor practices are ones we'd like to encourage.
Right. Some critics say that prison work programs like CCI and some in Texas are enormous corporations operating with slave labor. What's the answer to that?
In a way, that's accurate. Of course, slaves weren't paid anything, but these people, they don't have the same rights as normal workers. And so if you're concerned about making sure that workers are able to unionize, to air collective grievances, then basically you're talking about a whole industry, an enormous corporation whose labor is literally captive. And of course there's worries about that. As one person I spoke to said, you couldn't expect prisoners to meaningfully consent to medical experimentation or testing. Why would you expect them to be able to meaningfully consent to a labor contract? And you know that causes a lot of concern for people who are concerned about labor.
We're speaking with Graham Wood. He's books editor at Pacific Standard, and he visited the Colorado Correctional Industries. That's a place where artisanal products like tilapia and partridges and Chardonnay grapes are farmed by prisoners working for about $1.50 an hour. Well, obviously, this is presented as a benefit to prison bottom lines, right? How much are prisons or states making off of these kind of operations?
They're making tens of millions of dollars per year. They can't take state funds if they fail. And so the Colorado Correctional Industries in particular, they have to make sure that they make enough money to at least be a profitable entity. They really don't do a whole lot more than that, but they do need to make sure that they're not taking state funds and being a drain on resources. It's a lot easier to do that, of course, if you're not paying people more than $1.50 an hour.
But it is still a big gamble for them. How about the companies that would partner with CCI? Not everybody is going to want to buy something that they know was made in prison. How do they sell it to customers?
Well, that's an interesting trick. So there are rules that say that when products of prison labor come out of prisons, they have to be labeled as products of prison labor. But of course, if you have eaten buffalo milk mozzarella, there's no label on the milk that says that. Or in the cheese that says that. What they can do, however, is when it comes out the prison doors, it has to say it's made by prison labor. When it finally gets to the customer, though, it's been repackaged, and legally so that you can't tell. And so the stigma that might be there for some kinds of prison labor products has been erased by the time it gets to the end consumer.
Where are these products being sold?
They're being sold probably to people like you. At Whole Foods, for example, they carry tilapia that's raised in Canyon City, Colorado's farm. It could be in any consumer grocery store, you could find a product of prison labor.
Well, I guess you think especially of the shopper at Whole Foods, you know, somebody who's very aware of artisanal foods and priding themselves on buying fair trade products. What if people did know that these products were being made by inmates?
I think you'd find that a lot of shoppers would be uncomfortable about this. And, you know, Whole Foods doesn't really make an effort to conceal the fact that they're raised by inmates, but of course they don't stress that either. You know, there are things like Australian red clawed lobsters that are largely purchased by these kinds of coastal elites that are very sensitive to labor issues or like to think of themselves as sensitive. And so if you find a large consumer movement that tries to object to prison labor, there might be some traction there. But so far, that hasn't happened.
These kind of prison work programs are also positioned as helping inmates, you know, teaching them skills, trades. Is that a fair claim?
I think so. You know, whatever concerns we have about the programs, one of the complications is that they almost certainly are good for the prisoners. That is, if you put someone in a cage for 6 years, then how much use is that person going to be in the labor force when he gets out, especially if his previous experience before prison was as a hold-up artist or a criminal? These people are working jobs that keep their minds active, teach them some skills, and that eventually perhaps teach them how to hold a job for the first time in their lives. And, of course, you have to remember that the prisoners who graduate to the privilege of working in these industries, they've already proven themselves to be some of the least incorrigible inmates. But, yeah, when you actually see them working diligently as you know, serious members of a labor force, and also working side by side with free workers who are there as usually as managers for the joint venture partners of business that work in the prisons, then you can see that they certainly rehabilitated themselves if they were as bad as you might guess.
Graham Wood, thank you so much. It's just an amazing story, and appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Graham Wood is books editor at Pacific Standard. You'll find a link to read his article from our prison to your dinner table and see some of the photographs from CCI. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, the death row last meal has become another form of pop culture voyeurism. We're going to learn about the history and significance of that tradition when Word of Mouth continues.